So here's my question. In the keynote, we did do a brief overview of SALT through Dave's demo, a very brief overview. And so what I wanted to ask you all is, do you want me would you rather me give you a talk on the basics of SALT to kind of cover the bases of things like grains and pillars and how the basics of states work? So basically I'll say, do you want to talk about the basics of SALT? Or do you want to talk about some advanced and more crazy topic like how the configuration management compiler and runtime works? So I will put it up to a vote, and then I will talk on whatever you want me to talk about, okay? So who in this room wants a really basic, a talk about SALT basics? Please raise your hands. Okay. Who wants to talk about crazy deep internals? Okay. This Bo, you want crazy basics? Okay. This is kind of a 60-40 split, which is exactly what I was worried it would be. and so they're looking for an adapter for me. But I'll give you both. How much time do I have? 30 minutes. This is going to be a blast. Okay. Does anybody have a VGA to HDMI adapter? Yeah, sure. Yeah, thanks, Dave. Yeah, Dave, if you can come up and get a few minions going for me while I kind of introduce a few things. I'll start by talking about some of the deep stuff. Okay, so I can't stand still. It's been a problem since I was a child. Okay, so let me actually start while they're setting this up by talking about SALT's configuration management compiler and runtime. This is one of the places in SALT that people see as a black box, but it's actually very, very powerful, very flexible, and something that can be used in a lot of different ways. So as an example, the actual configuration management runtime that I originally wrote for configuration management is also used to generate all of the pillar data inside of SALT. It's also used as the backplane for SALT's single event reactor, and it's also used as the backplane for SALT's thorium reactor. What am I missing? Oh, yeah, and for configuration management. and so understanding how this system works is one of those things that's really central to SALT. There are a number of core components inside of SALT, including the state system, which if you understand really their internals, you kind of start to get into those core philosophies around how SALT works under the hood. And so we've got the state compiler and runtime as one of those core components. Another core component is the transport mechanisms. And another core component that's really important is the SALT loader. Okay? Now, when we look at... I don't have a whiteboard either. This is challenging. when we look at SALT states... Okay. What we are looking at is that one of the core philosophies of SALT is that every aspect of the system is tangible. The user can interface on many layers inside of the system so that we're able to say, here's some really easy to use high level interfaces, but we expose the entire track down so that you have maximum flexibility. And so that you also have maximum exposure into how all of those individual components are working. And so when we start at the state system, at the very top, you've got the SLS files, okay? Or what we refer to as formulas. Those SLS files, are a definition of any language interface that you want to use for the state system. One of the benefits of SALT's state system is that it's entirely data-driven and therefore language agnostic. And so for those of you who are newer to SALT and were looking at just Dave's demo in the keynote, what you saw was the default, what we call renderer system, or the default language. And the default language inside of SALT is that we just use YAML, which is YAML ain't markup language. And it's basically a human-readable data serialization medium. And so we take that YAML and convert it into a data structure. Since SALT's language agnostic and we go through this rendering layer to get to the right data structure that the compiler and runtime care about, that means that we're able to ship with multiple languages. And so we ship with multiple Python DSLs. You're there, huh? You were like typing sudo on the stage. That drives me crazy. Can you type sudo-i for me? I am crazy. So like I had to reinstall Tumbleweed on my laptop about 2 weeks ago because I was playing around with Snapper too much with SALT. And I apparently like deleted a bunch of important snapshots and bad things happened. But I play around as root because I'm nuts. Okay. So I'm not going to break your laptop again. Okay. So let's see. We've got on Dave's laptop here, I've got to admit, this is easily one of the hardest presentations I've ever done. Like on the fly, no preparation, somebody else's laptop. We're doing good. Can't even handle this different keyboard. This is so embarrassing. Okay. All right. So like I'm saying, we've got the renderer aspect here. Okay? And if you're familiar with YAML at all, you'll recognize that this is just a data structure. And so the top level is a key to a top-level dictionary. And then that PKG and service are also keys to a dictionary. And in YAML, every time we put a dash in front of something, that means it's part of a list. And so we take that data structure, which is defining how everything works, okay, and then we convert that through the renderer system into a piece of data that we call high data, okay? High data is all of the information that we need for the runtime, and so we can actually see what the high data looks like. So we can see what the high data looks like by there we go. Is your master and everything running on here, Dave?
Yep.
Thank you. You're fantastic. This is when I forget my own API that I wrote.
Show us
LS. Yep, it's SLS. Thank you. Okay. All right. Now, as Dave was explaining on stage, everything gets in kind of this pretty output. And so it actually makes a little more sense if we go like this. Okay. And so what we're looking at then is the actual high data that we've compiled. And so you can also see that we've inserted a bunch of things in here. And let's see. That's my chord limit. So we see that web server key that we saw before, right? And then package and service, and then those lists. So some of the things that we've inserted, which start to help you kind of understand what's going on under the hood, is that we've got an environment that we pull that information out of, and then we've got the SLS reference file that we pulled it out of. This helps us with tracking debugging information so we know where this data actually came from. And then you'll see all of these order numbers strewn throughout. Salt is declarative, but it is also completely deterministic in how the configuration management runtime executes. And so what it does is it determines the order based on these numbers. These numbers get inserted based on the position in the file. So the first one that you define is the first one in the order that's going to be run. Okay? Now, you can actually override the order and see a change. So if we put order 1, then the order would be 1, and this one would still be 10,000. Okay? If we put order 87,000 for this one, then this one would be 97,000. Okay? So it's all taken care of. Now, the benefit there is, again, that you can determine finite ordering. But since salt's declarative, we've also got this concept of requisites. Okay? And so we can look at that a little more when we get a little deeper into the runtime and how it works. So that's high data. Once we've got the high data, I'm actually going to skip a couple of steps here for sake of time. But once we've got that high data, it gets compiled to what's called low data. Now, the compilation process for low data, what it does is it not only changes the data structure into something that SALT's configuration management runtime can read, ingest, and execute, but more importantly, it takes care of a lot of the syntactic sugar that's available to you. So, for instance, one of the concepts inside of SALT states is a requisite in. So, actually, let me cover requisites really quickly for the people who are a little newer. When you're declaring a SALT state, you can use something called a requisite to say that, say, this service should only, you should only try and start this service if a package and a file have been installed. Okay? And so, therefore, we are requiring them. So you can have a keyword that says require, or in this case, watch, is just another one of these ways of requiring things that says, I'm a service, and I require a package. But we've also got a system called a requisite in, which is an inverse requisite. And so we could say watch in on package and reference the state, to say that this state of this name requires me, instead of the service saying I require them. Okay? This is something that gets completely compiled out when we go from high data to low data. And let me see if I remember the command to view low data from a single SLS. Actually, this might be a little easier in JSON. Yeah, I think that's probably a little clearer. Okay. And so now we're looking at that information as it's gone through the next compilation path. Okay? And so what we've got is, as you can see, we've got the minion ID, DA salt here. And then we've got a list. And so it is at this point, it is an ordered list. We have ordered it using the order keyword. Now, so that it's all in this order. And then this is the order in which the salt runtime is going to process this information. Okay. Now that we're looking at the low data, you'll also see that there's still a couple of, added data features in here. So now we've got this dunder ID. Okay. Which is web server. If you remember the SLS file, it was web server right at the top, right? And we share that ID down here. And we've also got a name. And the name and the ID are used in concert to track different components during the runtime. So, for instance, we've got a watch statement here, which is the value of a list of keyword arguments. And so this is saying watch package web server. And so it will resolve that it is watching the thing with a state of package and an ID or name of web server. Okay? So the next thing that I should mention in here is the difference between a state and a fun. So how the state system works, when we really simplify it, is that we write that state. Okay. And this is a direct logical mapping to the code. So back in the early days of SALT, before I'd actually written any documentation and things didn't work quite yet, like 2011. And like Dave was there. The actual documentation to understand how to write states was to open up the source code and look at the mapping of how the files are written, just because of how the mapping works. And understanding this mapping makes it really, really easy to write the actual states that are being executed. So takes me a second to remember it's disk packages on this terrible Ubuntu machine. It's not a properly put together SUSE system. I've been giving Dave crap for months. Okay. Okay, so all of the available states exist as Python files, and all of SALT's written in Python. Okay? And so, for instance, we had service and package in there, and obviously they're not showing up on my list here because it's just too big. But package.py is therefore just a file in here. And these files are so much bigger than they were in the old days. This was so much easier to demonstrate. Oh, that's right. Okay. And so in that load data, it said state PKG, which is a direct reference to the PKG file inside of SALT's loader. We can rename this file if we want to. We just haven't in this case, so that it gets what we call a virtual name instead of the loader. All right. And the fun inside of that low state was called install. Now, we saw it in the actual state file as pkg.install, but that is a literal reference to the package module and the installed function. And then the name field, okay, that gets populated either by the ID that we saw right at the top there or by explicitly calling out name, is always the first argument and required argument to every state function, okay? And then just by adding an argument into the state function, then we can accept that argument via the state file, and we're done. And so one of the goals in that design is to make it as incredibly simple as possible for people to extend the state system so that it is that very direct mapping into the literal function. And let's see. And this is actually a really good example also because it accepts star star quarks. And for those of you who are familiar with Python, star star quarks means that I'll accept any old keyword that you throw at this function. And subsequently, this means that we'll accept any old keyword that you put inside of the state file as well. If we don't accept star star quarks and you put an argument in that doesn't exist, SALT will get upset with you and tell you, well, I ran anyway, but I won't for long. We're going to deprecate that. We've been saying we will for like 2 years. You know how that goes. But it sends a warning that says you pass in an argument that we don't recognize, and so it was ignored. Okay? Instead of just crashing. Every time we try to make it crash, everybody yells at us, and we deprecate it for another year. Okay. Which means we'll probably never get there. Now, how the state runtime itself then works. And I've been terrible. I promised that I'd try and do both, but seriously, I had 23 minutes. How the state runtime then works, okay, is if we go back and we look at the load data that we were just looking at. Okay. So we've got the low data. And inside the runtime, these are referred to as chunks. So each dictionary in the list is a chunk. And so we start iterating over each chunk. And each chunk gets evaluated and then executed. What the evaluation of the chunk does is it says, one, has this already been run? Just to double check. Two, does this have any of those requisites that I was talking about? Now, I mentioned earlier that the order, right, is finite and deterministic. And it's going to run in the order in which it's defined here. But more specifically, it is evaluated in the order in which it's defined here. And so what happens, okay, is that we pull out this first chunk and we say, is there a requisite involved? And we look at it and there isn't, because it looks for any watch or require or prereq or only if or on change is one of the requisites that we have. And it says, there's no requisite involved. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and execute it. It executes that pkg.installed function that we just looked at. That pkg.installed function then returns a data structure, which is what the state runtime expects. And that data structure contains four important pieces of data. Okay, it contains the name for tracking purposes. It contains all of the changes that were made by that function. It also returns a result being true, false, or none. True meaning all's well. None mean, false meaning I failed to do what you want me to do. And none meaning I was going to make changes, but you told me not to. Okay? And so then that information goes into a dictionary that we call the running dictionary inside of the runtime. Okay? It shows everything that's already been executed. And so when we get to our next chunk, this one's got a requisite. And so it says, oh, I've got a requisite. It's called watch. And so then it says, okay, I've got a watch requisite for PKG web server. The first thing it does is check that running dictionary to say, have I already run this thing that I'm requiring? If I have already run this thing that I'm requiring, then obviously I don't need to run it because it's been done. And so I just need to evaluate it to say, did it run successfully? What are the conditions of the requisite? The watch requisite, for instance, says, I care to see if it ran successfully and I care if it made any changes to the system. If it didn't make any changes to the system, then the watch requisite set just acts like a normal old require and just says, okay, good, I can execute my routine because this one went successfully. But if the one that it required went successfully and made changes, okay, then watch says, yep, I can run my routine, and there's a special routine called mod watch in the state that it runs in addition to it that will restart the service if it wasn't already running. And that's what mod watch does for the service. And that's one of the things that's nice about watch is that we can program it to behave differently when the thing you're watching makes a change depending on what you're doing. So, for instance, you can make the watch statement remount a mount point if your configuration to set up a mount point is watching something that if it changes, then that would require a remount, okay? Similarly, command.run, just shelling out. We can have a watch statement that says, basically only run this command if the thing I'm watching made some changes, okay? Now, the next thing to be aware of in how this works is how the ordering works. So let's say that this first chunk required the second chunk. So when it's evaluated, okay, so obviously it's going to evaluate in order. When it's evaluated, it says, do I have any requisites? If it does have a requisite, it will evaluate the requisite before running itself. And so this allows us to have a linear evaluation of what's occurring inside of the runtime. And it always evaluates the requisites in a finite order. And so the evaluation of those requisites still remains, or still maintains perfect determinism. Okay? All right. I'm out of time. And there's another talk, and I will not impede upon that talk's time. So I don't even really have time for questions. If anyone does have questions for me, questions or comments, if you've got rebuttals or arguments, save them until after I fly home. feel free to grab me and talk to me on the side. I will let you go. And actually, I think it's lunch next, isn't it? I don't even know. I'm not even going to pretend to know the schedule. I'm totally on the fly here. Okay, thanks.